And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Employees of Canadian Pacific Railroad have been working over the past few days to clean up the aftermath of a wreck that derailed 15 tank cars north of Dubuque. The derailment last Wednesday caused three cars to erupt into flames and three to slide onto the frozen Mississippi River. It's an accident that's a stark reminder that millions of gallons of ethanol and crude oil pass through Iowa on freight trains, and it's often transported in outdated tank cars that are vulnerable to puncture in a derailment. This half hour, we want to explore what hazardous materials are moving through Iowa and the implications of this and the hazards. Joining us, first of all, Andy Cummings, spokesperson for the Canadian Pacific Railroad. Welcome to our program, Andy.
Hi, Ben.
Tell us what happened here north of Dubuque last Wednesday.
Well, what we know is that at about 11:30 a.m. on February 4th, as you said, this past Wednesday, a CP train did derail. The train was eastbound. It was a train consisting entirely of ethanol, derailed two locomotives and 15 cars along the Mississippi River about 10 miles north of Dubuque. Incidents like this we take very seriously. We are currently conducting an investigation into not only what caused the incident, but what led to the cause as we continue to monitor and work on remediating the site.
Mm-hmm. Any ideas? What are you looking at as possible causes when something like this happens?
It would just be too early to speculate on that. It's an ongoing investigation.
Okay, so you can't even say what the most common causes of derailments are?
I wouldn't want to address that. I'm not an expert on derailments, but we take these incidents very seriously, and we're looking in detail at what led to this incident.
I understand this ethanol was being transported in outdated tank cars, less safe than more modern ones. Tell us about these tank cars. They're called DOT-111s.
That's right. The 15 cars that derailed, 14 of those cars are DOT-111 cars. And I want to make absolutely clear that this is a container that is approved by the Federal Railroad Administration, U.S. Department of Transportation, for the movement of ethanol. And so these are not cars that CP owns. These are cars that are provided by the shipper. And as they do meet federal standards, we are required to haul these cars. Now, CP has taken the position that we would like to move ethanol and other dangerous goods in the safest container possible. And so we have called for immediate and meaningful upgrades to tank car safety standards. But in the meantime, we are a common carrier railroad, which means that we are required by federal law to handle shipments that meet federal standards. And at this time, the DOT-111 tank car does meet federal standards.
Do you have any idea what would have happened if this ethanol had been shipped in more modern, safer tank cars?
I'm not in a position to conjecture on that. Every situation is unique, and I wouldn't want to conjecture as to what might or might not have happened.
Mm-hmm. So you're hauling for the ethanol producer here, the company, which is who?
We're not in a position to name our individual clients.
Okay, you don't name whose ethanol you were hauling.
We would not disclose that publicly. We work directly with our customers in instances like these.
Okay. So who's responsible for the cleanup? Who's cleaning this mess up, and whose tab does it go on?
Well, CP is working to clean it up. We have both employees who are experts in environmental remediation, and we have contractors that are available in situations like this that are experts in analyzing the impact to the environment and remediating it. Right now, we're working very closely with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. We're working very closely with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, as well as with the U.S. EPA, to analyze exactly what the impact is, and to come up with an effective remediation plan. And that will be implemented by both CP employees and by contractors.
Mm-hmm. What does the site look like today, Tuesday, almost a week after the accident?
So all the rail cars that had derailed have been moved to another location. Of the 15 that derailed, 14 were carrying ethanol. Two of them were re-railed and removed by rail. The other 14 have been removed to an off-site staging location about 1,000 feet away. At that site, they have been cleaned and purged to ensure that there is no more ethanol present in that tank, nor any vapors remaining. And at that site now, it has become a salvage operation. We're going to work with a steel recycler to come in and safely cut those cars up and remove them from the site. We are moving trains through the site at a reduced speed in the meantime.
So how much ethanol polluted the environment, be it on the frozen river or the riverbank or wherever?
We don't have an estimate of that at this time, but we are working, again, closely with Iowa DNR and with the EPA to make an estimate of that, and we'll make that available when we have a good estimate.
I'm wondering, you know, this reminds us that, of course, despite all safety precautions, accidents happen no matter what type of equipment you use. We have to think back to last July in Quebec when an unattended 74-car freight train derailed in Quebec. Now, that was carrying Bakken crude in these same type of DOT 111 tank cars. It started a fire. Several of these exploded. 47 people killed, 30 buildings destroyed. It was a huge disaster. Makes me wonder, as I'm sure it does make listeners wonder, if I'm in a community close to a rail line hauling hazardous materials, either ethanol, as it was in this case last week, or Bakken crude oil or any kind of crude oil, will I know? Are people in potential danger close to these lines notified of this by your company?
Well, first of all, I should note that the incident that happened in Lac-Mégantic, Quebec, which was an extremely tragic incident, as you note, was not a CP incident. It occurred on another railroad, but it was something that I think we all learned from. It was something that everybody involved in the handling of crude oil watched, and we took a number of steps at CP to ensure safety to the extent that we can do that, and those included more frequent train inspections, more frequent track inspections. We took a very close look at our training program to ensure that we're doing everything we can to be as safe as we can be. And in fact, railroads are the safest way to move dangerous goods over land.
I guess what I'm talking about, though, because we're running short of time, is notification. If I live close to a rail line that could be, if there was an accident, affected, will I know?
Well, certainly we will notify the community immediately when an incident like this occurs.
I'm talking about before an incident, just so I know that Bakken crude or ethanol is traveling close to my community. Do you notify authorities about that so people will know?
Yes, the emergency responders who are interested in knowing what is moving on a rail line can contact the railroad, and we will make that information available to them. For security reasons, we do not share details of our dangerous goods movements publicly.
Okay, security reasons meaning homeland security, possible terrorist threats?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay, Andy Cummings, spokesperson for the Canadian Pacific Railroad. Thanks for the information.
Okay, thank you, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Let's continue talking about last week's fiery train derailment north of Dubuque. More broadly, about the shipment of hazardous materials over rail lines in the Midwest. Joining us now, Kevin Baskins, a spokesperson for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us in our Des Moines studio. Also, David Swertney is with us. He's Associate Professor in Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of Iowa, also Associate Faculty Research Engineer for the IIHR, Hydro Science and Engineering at the University of Iowa. David Swertney joining us by phone. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Great to have you. And Aaron Jordan, a Gazette and KCRG-TV reporter. Aaron Jordan, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Ben.
We have just a few minutes. I want to make sure we make the most of it. Kevin Baskins, let's start with you. You heard the conversation I had with the representative of that rail line. What can you tell us? He couldn't tell us anything about the magnitude, the impact of this ethanol spill. Do you know?
Well, at this point, we're doing a lot of monitoring downstream. We actually have... we're monitoring right at the site, both on the ice where there was some ethanol that pooled on top, as well as where the tank cars actually broke through and there's open water. And then as we go downstream, we're basically going every 6,000 feet. We're getting three readings, one on the east bank, one on the west bank, and one in the middle of the river. through about 10 miles down to roughly the lock and dam 11. Over the weekend, the other thing that we did was we started monitoring 130 miles downstream, actually a little bit south of Muscatine, because at that point, all the modeling that we had showed that that's where the leading edge of any plume would be. So we started monitoring there. I can tell you that we got our first results from that particular testing station back today. And at this point, that far downstream, there are no detects of ethanol.
Okay, so overall, the environmental impact, water quality impact, impact on wildlife, can you say anything at this point?
Well, and here's kind of the challenge that we have. First of all, where the spill occurred, most of the river is actually under ice. So any kind of visual type of contact, seeing fish or other aquatic life dying, is almost impossible at this point. We are trying to monitor places. There are certain places on the river where there is a little bit of open water. The end of wing dams, of course, the Lockin Dam, as we mentioned, we've been monitoring those to see if there's any dead fish that become visible. But at this point, the biggest concern that you have on something like this is the dissolved oxygen levels going down. At this point, we can tell you with a lot of samples in our hands, we have not seen any depletion of oxygen yet. But as ethanol dilutes into the water, it's kind of that process that depletes the oxygen from the water. So that's something that we are going to be continuing to monitor in the very near future.
Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about who's responsible for cleanup and the cleanup costs?
Well, the railroad is. And one thing I will say, the Canadian Pacific Railroad on this incident has been very good to work with. They responded quickly. When we had things that we needed from them, we got them promptly. They had a very difficult situation where that derailment occurred. It was a very remote place. It was very hard to get to. As I mentioned, you know, the river's on one side and there's ice on that side. You know, so they did a good job of really getting to those cars and getting the leak stopped as quickly as possible. It was a very difficult condition to get to.
Kevin Baskins of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources.
There is one thing
that
I would like
do.
To add, though. Mm-hmm. One other process that we have just started probably here in the last 24 hours is right there where the spill occurred, we are sparging air. Essentially what we're trying to do is in the immediate area where the spill occurred, evaporate the ethanol wherever possible into the air rather than let it dissolve into the water. We're hoping that will mitigate some of the potential environmental impacts that could occur because of this spill.
Running out of time, let's go to David Swartney, Associate Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of Iowa. You're into hydro science. Your reaction, David, as we learn more about this accident?
Yeah, you know, I think when there's a chemical spill, you really ask two questions. And it's, will the chemical persist in the environment? And then how easily and to where will it move and transport in the environment? And, you know, and no spills are good spills, but we're fairly lucky in that we know a lot of these questions, the answers to these questions for ethanol. It's highly soluble, so it will disperse into water and dilute fairly easily and readily. It's volatile, and you heard about the spokesperson from DNR talking about how they can take advantage of that volatility to get rid of some of those pure pooled liquids and by sparging it into the air. You know, and the other, it's biodegradable. It's going to break down the environment. Essentially, we gave some of the microorganisms in the river a good slug of carbon that they can use as food. And while that might come with oxygen drawdown, it should quickly, you know, remove ethanol from the situation. And then it's relatively non-toxic. You know, we everything's toxic at some level. And so at that close point of discharge, there were probably some organisms and wildlife and fish that were affected. But as it gets more and more dilute, I mean, you can make the joke that some fish would get a little bit inebriated or something. But we know enough about it. So we're fairly lucky in that ethanol is one of these things that we've got a good handle on. The risks, you know, the warning that we should take away from this is that there are a lot of chemicals we don't have this information for. And so when we look at what happened in the Elk River in West Virginia, it was a chemical that 4-methylcyclohexane methanol that at the time in 2014 we knew nothing about its toxicity, its environmental fate. So when those instances happen, that's when there's real problems, because you can't get ahead and calm the public and figure out best management practices.
So if you're going to spill a hazardous material, ethanol is not the worst one on the list.
Yeah, I don't want to make light of it, but I'd say we dodged a bit of a bullet there, that there could be a lot worse, things that are far more persistent, things that are far more toxic, things that can have a much more long-lasting impact on water resources. Those are the ones, and unfortunately, it's only a matter of time before one of those does spill, either here or somewhere else in the U.S., and that's when the real challenges present themselves.
Aaron Jordan, Gazette and KCRG-TV reporter, you've been reporting on these train cars, these DOT 111 train cars, for a while now, I understand. These were involved in this and also that horrible accident up in Quebec. What does this add to your information about it, this latest? Thankfully, no one died, no one was injured, and it looks like the environmental impact is minimal.
Well, you know, David was talking about the types of chemicals that are being transported by rail. You know, and we have emergency managers in Iowa have a limited amount of information about this. I think the railroads provide to them like a top 10 list of chemicals by volume that are being transported through their areas. Well, that's kind of limiting in terms of knowing, you know, when you get below top 10, what are the other ones we're looking at? A Johnson County commodity study showed, in addition to ethanol, there was also battery acid, anhydrous ammonia, pesticides, paint, other things like that. And so you can imagine there would be an environmental effect to those.
Mm-hmm. I guess I was surprised at the in speaking with Andy Cummings of the Canadian Pacific Railroad, there's a certain amount of secrecy there. They don't want to tell you everything. In fact, they are not forthcoming with where their hazardous materials are traveling.
Right. And in fact, the federal government required railroads to report last year if they were carrying 1 million gallons of crude oil or more through a jurisdiction. So we found out last year that that 9 Iowa counties have these extra large shipments of crude oil coming through. And that was kind of a groundbreaking reporting requirement.
Mm-hmm. David Swertney, would it be a good idea if we knew more about the hazardous materials traveling shipped through Iowa?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and a point that can't be overlooked is another thing that made this instance fairly, you know, you can put a positive spin on it, I guess, if you will, is that it was fairly high purity. Because sometimes even with knowing what's there, if there are impurities, the impurity in a chemical could be most of the risk that comes from an environmental exposure. And so I think there has to be more with respect to openness and disclosure of the chemicals that are being transported. Because you have to stay, when a spill happens, it's immediate that you have to alert the public. You have to have a plan in place to respond. And you can't do that if you're trying to figure out what's in the chemical that actually spilled. And there's lessons to be learned. This is what happened out in West Virginia at the Elk River. It evolved over time as they started to really get their head around what was in the spill.
Aaron Jordan, of course, this comes in the context at a time when debate in this country over a couple of pipelines, the Bakken pipeline directly affecting Iowa, as it would run through a number of counties in Iowa, but the pipeline out further west, the Keystone XL pipeline. So when we talk about that, what is the best way to get these resources to a place that where they can be refined and eventually used? Pipelines, trucks, trains?
Well, I found a really great article in Forbes that was kind of backed up by some great resources. It says 70% of the crude oil and petroleum products in the U.S. are shipped by pipeline. And that's kind of surprised me. But, you know, there's a lot of controversy about that. And there's different, you know, risks if you're transporting this stuff. You know, you can fit 30,000 gallons of crude or ethanol or any other liquid in a tank car transported by rail. A truck, like a you know a tanker who's going on the highway, you know, only take about 10,000 gallons. Pipelines can carry just an enormous volume beyond either of those methods. So, you know, if we all want to keep using oil, and you know, it's a matter of you know, we all need to figure out how to make this happen more safely.
Mm-hmm. David Swertney, where do you fall on that question? Pipelines, trains, trucks? How do we get these materials to where they're needed?
Well, I think I'll take a slightly different approach and say that as an engineer, I want to put in a plug for investment in infrastructure. I think we transportation and getting commodity chemicals and now more and more waste from here to there, it's inevitable. We're going to need to find safe ways to do it. And every year, the American Society of Civil Engineers rates our infrastructure, roads, railways, bridges, is beginning to be more and more close to failure. To really make sure transportation is safe, we need those infrastructure investments so that travel by rail is as safe as possible. I'm not trying – I know the cause of this particular spill is not yet known, but We have to make sure that we're putting the investment in place to transport it safely and minimize the risks associated with it.
Let's go quickly to a caller who dialed. We have just less than a minute left. Guy calling from La Crosse, Wisconsin. What do you want to chip in here at the end?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you that the oil train from Lac Megantic actually came through Iowa and Wisconsin through the BNSF rail lines. Secondly, there's groups up and down from Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois asking now for a full environmental impact statement of all things oil and hazardous material that is coming and running down the Mississippi River, and that everybody in Iowa should be aware that 430,000 barrels of oil travel through our area every single week, and they travel right on the Mississippi River on the Wisconsin border, which borders in Iowa. And this week we saw something that was, horrific in the fact that it impacted everybody from these states, not just people from Iowa. We deeply respect, the attention you're giving it to in Iowa, but we want you to know this is a four-state concern and a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're asking specifically for what, your citizen group?
A full environmental impact statement from the Army Corps of Engineers on all things hazardous material and oil that's flowing down the upper Mississippi River. We are turning the river into an industrial corridor without any real discussion about the safety of these materials. Just so you know, 1 year to the date of the derailment in Dubuque, 13,000 gallons of oil spilled from a CP rail line from near La Crescent, Minnesota, which is near the Iowa border.
Okay.
All the way up to Wabasha, Minnesota.
We have to go, Guy. I'm sorry. Thanks for chipping into this from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Thanks for calling, Guy. And we have run out of time. Thank you very much. Kevin Baskins of the Department of Natural Resources, David Swertney of the University of Iowa, and Aaron Jordan of the Gazette and KCRG TV. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And coming up on tomorrow's program, Politics Wednesday, we're going to take our view outside the U.S., actually, to foreign policy that affects us here in the United States. We'll talk about an update on ISIS. Also, we'll talk about a number of other things. Netanyahu's visit to Washington, for instance. We hope you'll join us for that. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.